Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
What comes up for you when you hear the word conflict? The first definition in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary is fight, battle, war. The second is antagonistic state or action. Even the very first definition that pops up on Yahoo is a serious disagreement or argument, typically a protracted one. This is a bit less drastic, but hardly any more inviting. So is it any wonder that certain individuals avoid conflict in their relationships like the plague? And to be told that not only do all couples, even the happy ones, fight, but that if you don't fight, there's a problem. This only doubles down on the fear. I mean, what other relationship do we have where we are told that fighting is not just healthy, but required? But what if there were another way to look at the inevitable disagreements two people, even two people who love each other dearly, will have? Well, Dr. Elizabeth Dorrance Hall, Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at Utah State University and the Director of the Family Communication and Relationships Lab, is here to explain just that. So, Dr. Hall, Elizabeth, thank you so much for being on the show and talking about this really important topic.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to be here.
So, you wrote a piece for Psychology Today called Why Conflict is Healthy for Relationships, that tackles the unpleasantness of conflict, but also makes the argument that it's necessary. So based on the definitions that I just read, can you expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely, yes. So to start, I think conflict is not necessarily synonymous with fighting. So when we talk about communication and conflict, we're talking more about disagreements, and plenty of couples, you know, engage in healthier forms of conflict. Although volatile couples, so couples that fight pretty in the ways that you were describing earlier, can actually be healthy. It's all about how they make up and how and what happens in the conflict. So if you're just going around and around in circles and nothing is getting solved, that's the kind of really unhealthy conflict. Or if one partner's trying to fight it out and the other just shuts down, those are two really unhealthy ways to have conflict. But there are healthier ways. And it turns out that when we have effective, healthy conflict, it can be really good for our relationship. So that's what I was trying to get at in writing the article, that conflict's natural. And it's a really fun topic, I think, to talk about with people because so many people experience it and so many people absolutely dread it. So trying to kind of open the doors and help them see that there are some healthy outcomes can be a really good thing.
Well, because, you know, the truth is, and I think we're all lulled into a little bit of false belief when usually when we fall in love with our partners, there's not a whole lot of disagreement. There's not a whole lot of anything that could possibly be remotely be considered conflict. It's like, oh, they know everything about me. They can anticipate my every desire. You know, because, I mean, and part of that is because one, we're spending so much time together. Two, we're putting on our best behavior.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
And then three, we have these wonderful neurochemicals that are like coursing through our bodies, which just, you know, make everything look rosy and happy. And then suddenly we come like crashing down. And it's like, well, what do you mean you don't want to go to my mother's for Christmas?
Yes.
You know, or why can't you put the toilet seat down, or whatever the other multitudinous things
absolutely
are.
Yeah, so I think what you're getting at here is as our lives become more intertwined, we become more interdependent with our partners. So this is actually one of the reasons I talk about why conflict can be so healthy. It signals that we're interdependent. And conflict only arises when we have competing goals that these two people have that cannot be, solved. So it signals that we're interdependent, meaning that we don't have conflict with people who whose goals are going to affect ours in that way. So it's actually a really good thing when you get to that point in your relationship where you start to realize that we are interdependent, and especially when you live together, so much of your lives are interdependent. And so conflict can really signal that for people. So it's kind of the next step in that relationship after the honeymoon period.
Right. And I really wish that more people would recognize that this is a normal developmental part of marriage.
Yes.
It doesn't mean you made a mistake. It doesn't mean you picked the wrong person. Because in reality,
right,
no matter who we interact with, you know, our best friend, our child, somebody at work, we're going to have disagreements. We're not going to be completely, oh, sure, that's just the way I want it. And you know, but we're also not taught what to do with that. And like you were talking about earlier, there are very, very different ways of dealing with disagreement. And that's also, I think you're talking about, a growth opportunity, a learning opportunity to go, oh, this is what it's like for you when, when I disagree with you. Or, you know, this is the way it was handled in your family. And a lot of times, that's our norm. Whatever happened in our four walls growing up, well, this is the normal way of being until we find out our partner's experience is something completely different.
Absolutely. Yeah, we typically see our parents fighting and we don't see the resolution, or we never see our parents fighting because they hide it from us.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of those situations are the actual healthy way to deal with conflict.
Right, because, you know, and as you said before, and I personally don't like the term conflict, and I try not to use it because it has those negative connotations. I prefer talking about disagreements. But it's still all the same thing. And it's, you know, trying to give our children or a complete experience of what this means. Because even, I mean, our kids, if you have more than one, there's going to be conflict between the two of them. I don't care how much they love each other. I don't care how much they get along. At some point in time, they're going to be going at each other's, you know, throats. And but if they can see that, oh, it's okay to disagree, it's okay
to not like what somebody's doing. Yeah, it's normal. It's part of being in a relationship.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, and it's such a laden thing, because I think some people do, but I'm not sure everybody really has an understanding of their own reaction, response to disagreement.
Yeah.
And I think that's another place where, because I see this all the time. I see, well, you know, one person wants to, you know, get in and deal with this and get it over with and get it done. And then the other person's like, whoa, I need to go process.
Yes. You know, getting on the same page can be really one of the big challenges for dealing with conflict in healthy ways.
So in the article, going back to that, you described three things that couples need to know about conflict to shift their idea. You were talking about the negative connotation of conflict, but shifting it from the negative to the beneficial. What are those three things?
Sure. So the first one actually was what I was talking about before, that conflict signals that we are interdependent, which is really a good step in your relationships as you're trying to build a relationship with someone. But the second one is that conflict signals a need for change, right? So we often think that we're fighting about silly little things, but there's actually something deeper going on, typically. So it provides us with an opportunity to make that change. I have a colleague here, Claire Canfield, who has an excellent TEDx talk on conflict, if anyone wants to look that up. But he talks about conflict as being beautiful and a catalyst for change, which I think is counterintuitive in a lot of ways. But yeah, without conflict, we can get stuck in our old ways. We could be bothered by something, or our partner could be bothered by something that we never even realize because they don't bring it up. So conflict can be really good in that it signals a need for change and then gives us an opportunity to deal with it. The issue comes about when we don't deal with it, or we don't figure out what the conflict is actually about.
That is absolutely true, because it's not necessarily about the toilet seat.
Right. Or the dishes, or all the common money. I mean, money is a huge thing that couples fight about. And a lot of times it's, I think a lot of these conflicts actually boil down to respect. So is it that you don't respect me or trust me with the finances, or you don't respect the fact that I make dinner for our family every night by helping with the dishes after? So it's a lot of times a lot deeper than just like, oh, it makes me crazy when you leave your ice cream bowl in the sink.
Right. It's what the ice cream bowl stands for, not just the fact that it's in the sink.
That's exactly right. And that's actually the third one. So conflict isn't always about what it seems to be about at first. It's often this lack of respect or some other threat to our ego or something that we're, something that someone says that kind of sets off this chain reaction in your mind that makes you start thinking about other things. And then that really confuses your partner, because they're like, well, I didn't say anything about that. Why are you upset about that now? But it's because these issues, especially when we don't attend to them as they come up, they build over time. And then we've got this kind of, in communication, we call it, gunny sacking. So you're kind of filling up this sack with all of your complaints, and then they can explode out. And then your partner's like, what has just happened?
Right. And then you're whacking your partner upside the head with the sack of stuff you've been collecting, and they're like, whoa, wait.
And that's exactly right.
Well, I mean, and it is a challenge, because I mean, you talk about the need, that conflict or disagreement can trigger a need for change. And I think that's one of the things that, for me, when I talk to people about marriage, it, to me, it is the biggest challenge in marriage, is to recognize that the two of you are different people. You've had different experiences. You have different perceptions, and you're trying to build a life together. So it's kind of like, now what?
Yeah.
And it's recognizing that it's neither good nor bad. It's an is. And can we work together to find a way through this?
Absolutely. Yeah. And really listening to each other and what we actually want and need is so key to being able to work together. Because if you think about, who you were 10 years ago, say you're with your partner for 10 years, you were a different person 10 years ago. People change so much, and you can't always expect your partner to change with you in the exact same way. So conflict is sometimes necessary to sort of figure out where things are going and how things are different, and kind of meet each other in the middle.
And I think that's a really, really good point. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm having a critical discussion about conflict in relationships with Dr. Elizabeth Dorrance Hall. She's the Assistant Professor of Communication Studies and the Director of the Family Communication and Relationships Lab at Utah State University. So if you're finding that conflict is a problem in your relationship, there's too much, what if you tries to avoid it, whatever, I encourage you to take a moment and send me an email or give me a phone call and take advantage of my free, no obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After breakthrough session. You can reach me at area code 919-924-0463. That's 919-924-0463. Or by email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Because, no matter what term you give it, conflict, disagreement, whatever, it's going to happen. And the best way to deal with it is to learn how. So with that in mind, I'm getting back to the conversation with Dr. Hall Elizabeth, and talking about how you can change conflict from being a negative to something to being beneficial. And so when you talk about this in your article, and talking about it being seen as beneficial, you bring in the concept of something called conscious communication. So what is that, and why is it important?
Yeah, so to me, conscious communication is really connecting with our conversational partners. So we do a lot, especially with technology today, we do a lot of mindless or unconscious communication with other people. So this is really kind of focusing back on what's important, being fully present when we're with them, really listening. I actually just wrote another piece for Psychology Today about mindful listening that you and your listeners could check out. And validating others as a fellow human worthy of your time and attention. And that might sound crazy, like that you don't need to do that with your partner, obviously, that's someone you love. But it is, because so often we're focused on work, we're looking at our laptops, our emails, our phones, and the message we're sending, whether we mean to or not, is that that person is not worthy of our time, even if that's the opposite message we mean to be sending. So really focusing on what they're saying and being cognizant of our own message when we're paying attention or not really makes a big difference. So it's all about doing things with a much more conscious attitude, thinking about what it means and what it's saying to the other person.
And well, and you bring up something really interesting about the electronic communication, because even if we are in conversation, quote unquote, with our partners through texting or whatever, we know what we mean to say. So in our head, we're saying it in this way, with this mindset, with this tone of voice. But our partner can be receiving it in a completely different mindset. And so talking about being conscious, it's how many different ways can what I just wrote be interpreted?
Exactly.
You know, because I think this is a source, and you know, some people will talk about that the only way they can resolve differences is through either email or texting, because it gives them time to read, process, think about what they want to write, and they're not reacting, which I think is a good idea up to a point.
Right. Yeah, it probably depends on the issue and the relationship, right? So if this is someone that you live with and you spend a lot of time with and you only want to fight over email, that's a little strange. Although some of what I recommend about taking time and cooling down would really be facilitated by that. Mm-hmm. So maybe you could kind of make that happen without using email. So say, you know, I'm going to take a walk. This is really important to me. So it doesn't sound like you're walking away and leaving things, but, you know, letting them know, I'm just going to take a quick walk around the block. I'm going to take the dog out, you know, and I'll come back and we'll keep talking about this. I think part of communicating consciously and being in conflict consciously is all about being vulnerable. So a lot of times we like to put up these walls, we're feeling attacked. But the way to cut through the fact that this argument is not about the ice cream dish, it's actually about something deeper, is being vulnerable yourself, because you can't make your partner be vulnerable, but you can offer that up and hope that it's matched. And we know that people who, when you're building relationships, especially when you disclose something, that invites the other person to feel safe enough to disclose as well. So that is a kind of a communication strategy that we can use, is if we offer up our own vulnerabilities, especially if it's someone that loves you and you love them, hopefully they'll recognize what you're doing and, you know, offer up their own and really let you into their head and let them know the real reasons that they're upset, when you really let them know the real reasons you're upset. And then you can try to see the issue from your partner's point of view. So we've heard this a million times, try to, you know, be in the shoes of the other person. But that's really hard, especially if you don't know what's going on in their head. And we think we know our partner so well, but a lot of times the reason there's conflict is because there's something we don't know. So, you know, trying to make a safe space where you can both share is really important.
Well, and it's interesting that you talk about knowing or believing that we know what's going on in our partner's head, because then, of course, that brings up the word assume and the very famous expression that goes along with that. Because, you know, and sometimes we even believe or have convinced ourselves that our partner is going to react in a specific way. And so, you know, we come armed to the conversation because, well, I know my partner is not going to like this, so I need to, you know, armor up because, and I do think that in response to what you were saying about we can't force our partner to be vulnerable, which I agree, but we can certainly invite them to be vulnerable by how we react when they share something about their feelings. And I love that the fact that you talked about it being a form of respect.
Yes.
Because the fact that you experience this interaction differently than I do, for me, is a given, but not for a lot of people. But it's respectful to say, you know, I understand that this is the way that you're taking this. And by the way, when I say that, it doesn't necessarily mean I agree with you. It just means I'm acknowledging it.
Right. It's validating that their feelings and what they're going through is valid and human and worth your time and your energy.
And, you know, and I've had this conversation before, because my viewpoint is that while having good communication skills isn't going to be, you know, it's not the magic pill for a marriage or a relationship, but if you don't have good communication skills, the rest is a lot harder. So I've talked about this a lot, and you know, I keep having people on because I'm just hoping that somebody will say it differently and people go, oh, yeah. but you know, this idea of slowing down, taking a break, getting our brains involved all sounds really good. But how the heck do you do that when you're like all head up in the heat of the moment and I'm just really obsessed?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, I teach this for a living and I research this. And when I'm in my own conflict in my relationship, I just have to try and remind myself of all of these things. Because when you're in the moment, your hot system is engaged. You're not thinking very rationally. You're thinking, you know, you're upset, you're hurt, and it's painful. You know, we're reactive and quick to respond when everything we've learned is to slow down and take your time and think about what you're saying and think about the other person. So I think there's a couple things we can do. One is our awareness of that cool system that we want to be in. Uh-huh. So that when we're in that cool system and we understand the importance of it, we can be much more mindful of what we're saying and what our partner is trying to say to us. So taking that dog walk or whatever you can do to kind of cool down. Uh-huh. Also, like I've been saying, don't assume you know why your partner's saying what they're saying. Ask good questions. So trying to think of powerful, useful questions that can get at the deeper meaning or get that vulnerability out there and make them feel comfortable to be vulnerable as well.
Yeah, I use 2 points. I always recommend being curious or being confused.
Okay.
You know, yes. It's like take a position of, I'm really curious about this, or, you know, I'm confused about something. Can you help me understand? And then I think that's kind of a, oh, okay, as opposed to, why do you think that?
Yeah, exactly. Without trying to interpret it for them. I think that's a dangerous thing we can do, is say like, oh, you mean this. That's not letting them have the space to tell you what's really going on. That's you interpreting their feelings for them, which can be even more painful.
Right, and even more disrespectful. No, you don't feel that way. Excuse me. Yes, I do.
Yes. And then I think just the last point I have about that is that we have to be motivated to do this. This is not easy. So it's easy to get into conflict and just yell at your partner and bring up all the terrible things they've done before. It is way harder to be careful and intentional and conscious in the way that you communicate. So all of this is great to know, but it's only knowledge until you're motivated to put it into action. So make sure that you think about all the reasons why it's important to take these steps for your relationship.
Which is why it's a really good thing to learn it early. We can learn it at any point, but I think learning it early makes it a little bit more likely that it will continue. But because here's something that I run into all the time. What if I'm the person and I'm practicing all these skills and I'm consciously communicating and I'm really being careful, but my partner or I decide that, you know, now is not a good time. I need to go take the dog for a walk. What if my partner keeps going? What do I do then?
You know, that's a good question. I think you can only change yourself. There's no way you can get your partner to, you could teach all of this to your partner. I'm not sure what kind of effects that would have. My husband, you know, being married to a communication professor is an interesting case. So he knows a lot of this, but Yeah, I think you just have to do as much as you can and show that respect and hope that that respect is reciprocated. And if it's not, maybe the relationship isn't, you know, the healthiest relationship for you, because respect is so important in a relationship. And I think the other thing is understanding that this whole thing is a process. So it's not like the next fight you have, you can just implement all of this and everything's going to be fine. Right. It's going to take a long time. And it's not something you can check off of a to-do list. This is a lifelong, you will always have conflict with mm-hmm. people that you love. That's how relationships work. So understanding it's a process and it takes time and is continual is important.
Well, and I actually have a couple of down and dirty rules that I try to have people follow. Is one, don't start a serious conversation about a disagreement after 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, and sometimes I recommend people make an appointment. You know, I talk about having a set time once a week where you're going to, you know, this is the time that we bring disagreements to the table. Because then I know, okay, 10 o'clock on Saturday morning is the time. So, you know, you pick a time when you're rested and you can be, like you said, be present and not yeah. be distracted by, you know, whatever's going on. You know, somebody else, you know, somebody may have had a bad day at work, or they've got a problem at work, or something's gone with the kids, and I'm not prepared to talk about it now.
Absolutely, that's a great idea.
You know, and I like the idea, although it's probably a little scary for a lot of people when you say that this is a lifelong process.
Yeah.
No, I want to master it now. And I think that one of the things that people don't realize, and it's why I feel the need to keep talking about this, is the damage that can be done by not learning to do this well. Because mm-hmm. it really isn't the dish and the ice cream dish in the sink. It's the fact that I feel disrespected.
Right.
Or whatever that is. And I think that the respect, and I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I really do think that that is what holds relationships together. A lot of people think that it's love, and I'm all for love, and I think love is fantastic, but I'm not sure you can love somebody without respecting them too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is there anything else you'd like to share about this process, about how people can get better at it?
I would say, you know, practice as much as you can. Don't be afraid of conflict. I'm a longtime conflict avoider. I really hate watching other people have conflict, especially. But the more I learn about conflict and research and teach about it, the more I recognize that, like my colleague says, it is kind of beautiful. As uncomfortable as it makes us, it is a unique phenomenon in communication where two people are having these conflicting goals and something has to be done about it. There's a problem that needs to be solved, and there are ways to solve these problems where, you know, it's not always rosy, like everyone wins, but it doesn't have to be that both sides have to walk away miserable. There are kind of creative ways you can deal with it. And listening and understanding what's really going on is going to be key to getting into that deeper, those deeper reasons and getting into a good solution. So practice, you know, read about it as much as you can, and yeah, just try and be present and be calm.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, and I'm one of these people who gets hot very, very quickly.
Yes.
And then I kind of explode, and then I'm fine. But unfortunately, I have learned over the years. In fact, my husband actually said to me one time, he said, when you get upset, could you please not take a flamethrower to everything in your path? And luckily, he said that at a time when I was open to hearing it. And I said, you know, he's got a point. And it wasn't always him that I was taken out in the process. I mean, it would be anybody who happened to be around me would just be, you know, it's like, whoa. And I thought, well, this isn't really very productive and people aren't going to want to be around me if I'm like this.
So yeah, it's a great learning opportunity to learn about yourself for sure.
Yeah, sometimes not so great. I mean, I once had an out of body experience, just screaming at my children, kind of like standing outside myself, going, "Okay, Leslie, you know this isn't effective. What are you doing? Stop." So yeah. I mean, I just want to let people know that even those of us who know how to do this sometimes fail. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's like, but we have to. It's like we have to get up on the horse and get back in the game. So, Elizabeth, thank you so much for being on the show. Can you tell people where they can find out, you read more of your articles, find out more about how to communicate in a more positive way and look at conflict as being beneficial, not painful?
Yes, so you can find me on Psychology Today. I write for a blog there called Conscious Communications. You can search for that or search my name. I'm also on Twitter at edorancehall, and you can find me on my website at www.dorancehall.com.
Terrific. So getting good at communication, at dealing with the inevitable, inescapable differences between any two people, is a skill, and it's something that you really can learn and master through practice. So you can either let conflict erode your relationship, or, as we've talked about today, you can approach it from a more positive perspective. So the question is more harmony and understanding in your marriage worth it? I sure hope so. So until next week, stay loving.